Hello, welcome to the Patient Activation Network podcast. I'm your host, Matt Cavallo. I have with me today Patricia Fisher. Patricia is a registered nurse, storyteller, and published author. Patricia, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me today, Matt.
And thank you for being here. Before we get going, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, let's see. I was a nurse for 10 years, worked pediatric and adult critical care and trauma. I went to school during that time and earned my journalism degree and decided to combine both the health and the writing. Then continued on to get several articles, multiple articles published through different venues, and then started writing romance novels and have been doing that. And in that time also had four kids, and you know, my husband and I live in Texas. We keep every day trying not to get totally buried with parent stuff and, you know, just keep writing and keep going.
Now, it's interesting because being a registered nurse is incredibly busy, stressful profession. Mm-hmm. Being a mom is also incredibly busy and stressful. But you found the time to go back to school for your journalism degree in part because that's a lifelong passion, correct?
It is. It is. I've always loved writing. I've come from an incredibly long line of storytellers, from my great-grandmother, my dad, my grandmother. They're always extremely good at telling these wonderful tales. And so that want and love of the word just kind of stuck with me. So it just seemed like an easy transition, which anybody who's done journalism knows that when you think you walk into a room and you've been writing to yourself for years in journals or stories that you won't show anyone, you figure out real quickly that you have a whole lot to learn in writing, and you either embrace it or you drop the class. So I embraced it.
Patricia, let's talk a little bit about your writing. What kind of works have you published?
Well, I have multiple articles on everything from the nursing profession to mom articles, mom blogging, as well as entertainment, celebrity entertainment, and also romance writing is what I first published in 2012.
And you have a series, correct?
I do. I have a couple. One that I really, really love is I've set this whole family in a town called, a fictitious town called Tuscany, Texas, set in the Texas Hill Country. You know, the lives and loves of everyone there and who finds their happily ever after. And I know that a lot of people aren't always thinking that, or don't always think that romance is, you know, they have their preconceived notions about it, but it's always fun to write because we do know that people end in the happily ever after. It's just the journey to get them there. And sometimes that mimics other people's journeys. And that's always fun to write, to give everyone that happily ever after.
Now, you mentioned that this is set in a fictitious place.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anyone in this book that's actually based on a real person that you know?
Actually, yes. The third book called Lone Star Love is the character Tish in the book. She's the heroine. She is an ovarian cancer survivor. And she was based on my best friend who's going through ovarian cancer treatment. She's been going through it for the past 6 years. And the only reason that I can write this character with any sort of accuracy is because my friend Shauna was so forthcoming in everything she was going through. We've been friends for literally since we were infants. And so there was really no question off the table. And I actually had her read the book before I published it. It's made a huge difference. I love the fact that I can put really solid information in there, that I can put resources in there for people who are having questions or issues or need to find support or anything like that with ovarian cancer. Even the series itself, if you look at the covers, every single cover has a teal butterfly on the cover. And that's a little nod to her because of how much she's shared and been there for me over the many years, as well as me being there for her.
And I know that you had transitioned to being a journalist at this point, but you mm-hmm. never stopped being a nurse.
No.
Is there anything about that skill set that you were able to take and apply and help your friend through her cancer journey?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that is different between nurse training and doctor training, both are incredibly valued and essential parts of the medical team, whereas doctors are taught to treat from the disease perspective. and the nurses are taught to treat from a patient perspective. And so I'm able to come in as a nurse and say, what do you need? What can I do? What can I help you with? And mind you, you know, I live in Texas and she lives in Maine. And so that distance did propose some problems, but it, because she was so open and honest in talking with me, I could offer certain things, even if it was just a place to vent and to talk about. And she would ask me certain procedures and certain medicines and should I have this or should I call my doctor about these things? And we would talk back and forth about things and still do, actually. So it's you absolutely never stop being a nurse. I mean, I've got four kids. I mean, you never stop being a nurse when you have children. I mean, it's just kind of goes with the territory.
A lot of us get thrust into this care partner role, and we often don't have the same kind of skills or training that you have as being a registered nurse. When you talk to women that are facing this ovarian cancer diagnosis, how important is it to have a care partner, and what advice would you give to people that are thrust into this care partner role and may not have the same kind of background that you do?
You know, when Shauna was first diagnosed, she and I were talking and she said, I want to do something more and I don't know how to get more information out there. I said, well, let's write an article. So we wrote an article for Modern Mom, the website, and it said things not to say to someone who's been diagnosed with cancer. And it was a little short 7-bullet point list. And it talked about how to offer help when someone is in a situation like that. And there were certain things that you can say, like, what do you need? Is a great question for someone who's going through this. If you say, call me if you need anything, most people won't because they don't want to lay the burden of what they're going through on anyone else. And so you ask, what do you need? Something else is you keep checking in with these people. Say, I'm going to call you on Friday. I'm going to text you on Friday. I'm going to email you on Friday, whichever, and ask how you're doing. And I'm going to ask what you need that day. And sometimes people will say, well, I don't need anything and you don't need to do that. But to follow through, continue to be there for that person is essential. A lot of times people with cancer, their social circles get really small afterwards. And you wouldn't think so because so many people are diagnosed with multiple different forms of cancer these days. But this word still scares people and they still feel like there's that years ago, 50 years ago, you didn't say cancer because people thought it was contagious. Now people don't think it's contagious per se, but there's still that worry of facing your own mortality. So you have to kind of push that aside for yourself and be present with that person, whether it's physically present or, you know, calling, texting, even a card or something. One of the things that Shauna suggested years ago was when people are going back and forth for treatment, send them gift cards to the gas station or Starbucks or someone who delivers food. All these different things help. If you're not good at cooking, go offer to clean their bathroom or mow their grass or pick their kids up from school. I mean, there's all these things you can offer that aren't overwhelming, but there's something. If you want to do something like that, it's there. There's plenty of opportunities.
You mentioned that people's circles get smaller.
Mm-hmm.
People tend to isolate themselves. They tend to push people away. If you have a close friend that you sense is putting up those walls,
mm-hmm.
do you have any strategies for maybe taking those walls down?
I think the first approach would be to basically be honest with that person and say, look, I know you're stressed and I know you're potentially angry. A lot of people who get a diagnosis like this are going to be mad, scared and mad and all those adjectives. But it's important, I think, to continue to be present. Years ago, I remember sitting with a friend of mine and we were just sitting there eating ice cream and watching the sunset. And I remember her saying, you know, it is really cool to have a friend that I can just sit next to and not have to say anything. And sometimes that's the kind of friend you have to be. You're not going to go in to fix it or change it or anything. Sometimes those people just need to know that you're going to show up and you're going to be present. And that just slowly will, maybe they won't tear the walls down, but maybe they'll, you know, it'll crack a little bit. Maybe there'll be a hole in the wall. Maybe there'll be an opening to where you can, you know, talk a little bit more. And I wouldn't force anyone to talk about something they're not comfortable with, and don't offer the latest cancer diet or I read about this. You don't have to talk about cancer. You can talk about the stuff you normally talk about, and they may truly need that. So don't go into it thinking you need to fix or repair anything. Maybe just being present is what someone needs.
Patricia, we've been talking about your friend, Shauna. How is she doing today?
Well, she is great. She and I have met here in New York City for the National Ovarian Cancer Coalition Conference. And in fact, last night we went to go see a show, and this morning at breakfast, she's doing well. She's starting a new round of chemo, which she's, of course, frustrated by, but she's beaten the odds at this point. She was first diagnosed in 2011, and her odds of living this long were only like 34%. Here we are, almost 7 years later. She's still trucking along.
And do I understand that you two are working on a collaborative together?
We are. There's a couple of things. We started a website called Candid About Cancer years ago. And, you know, there's periods of time that we're both really good about posting, and there's periods of time that we're not. But I'm looking at it. I post from the caregiver and friend point of view, and she will post from the patient point of view. And it's been really cool to talk back and forth about what she sees and what I see, and then both of our emotional responses to both. One of the things that I put up there at one point was, it was frustrating to me as a friend to, you know, offer all this support. And then I remember her first saying she went to a survivor's group. And my initial reaction was, well, wait, why do you need to go to a survivor's group? Because I'm right here. I'm here for you. And that lasted about 10 seconds. Because I realized that I can be the best cheerleader ever, and you're going to beat this and rah, rah. But I'm not the person who's been through it. So she also needs these people who say, oh yeah, you took that medicine. We'll try this. This will help the side effects. Oh yeah, I went through that. You should talk to this person, you know, and that they can offer a very different perspective than I can. And so I embrace the whole community that has been built around her to deal with this.
Having a good friend that's living with a chronic illness, did you learn anything about yourself?
I learned to listen better. You would think after we'd been friends for 50 years, I would have learned to listen. It was a really challenging experience because I've always been the person in a group of friends that's the fixer, like the mama bear, that, you know, someone gets hurt, they're always defaulting to me. And I had to realize that sometimes fixing something isn't actually going in and putting a Band-Aid on it or, you know, offering Benadryl. It's a situation of sometimes the healing is just being present and listening and being the shoulder and the ear and asking the questions, fielding questions, those kind of things. It's just a different kind of healing. But because of her advocacy, I also had a cancer scare last August, where I had some changes in some ovarian cysts. And because of her being such an advocate for herself, I was an advocate for myself. And thankfully, the cyst was benign. I did have surgery. But it was one of those things that I probably would have maybe sat on a while and just said, well, you know, I've had them before. It's not a big deal. Versus actually going in and saying, you know, this is something's off and please check it. And I've got a great gynecologist. So he's been extremely compassionate and very receptive to any questions I have as well.
And how are you doing today?
I'm great. It's nice to know that that's taken care of and that's all good. I'm very excited about the opportunities that we'll have to spread more awareness and talk more about ovarian cancer and get more people involved. I think that it's something that's not talked about as much because people are afraid of it. It's one of those deep belly cancers that are hard to detect. And a lot of times the stories that I hear is, oh, you know, I had an aunt, I had a cousin, I had a grandma, I had a friend, all who had ovarian cancer. And by the time they found it, it was late. Whereas if we keep pushing awareness, if we keep pushing all this, maybe we'll help women find it sooner and advocate for themselves harder.
And I want to talk a little bit about that advocacy. I understand you're a part of a program called Our Way Forward. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us a little bit about your work there?
Well, Our Way Forward is this really great organization that focuses on the patient as a whole being. So I think sometimes when you have a group, all these different groups that say, we're cancer patients of, you know, breast cancer, colon cancer, what have you, the patient themselves gets lost and they just become their diagnosis. Whereas the Our Way Forward program looks at each individual person and fosters that journey they're taking with their cancer, with their ovarian cancer. So yes, this person's an ovarian cancer survivor, but this is their journey. And so they help them develop just a great way to, you know, handle and it's just a really cool program to kind of just, it's an all-encompassing patient program.
Is that something you and Shauna are doing together?
It's relatively new to me. I have no doubt that Shauna would be on board with it. We've talked a bit about it the last couple of days. Our attitude is whatever we can do to get more awareness out there, we're both fine with. And I always key off of her because I'm saying, is this something that you'd be interested in versus me saying, oh yeah, we're both in there. Because, you know, she has only so many hours in the day, just like I do. You know, we both have commitments. And so it's one of those things of, would you like to do it? Yes. Would you like to do it? No. But really, it's more getting as much information out there and really solid, truthful information out there regarding ovarian cancer, the symptoms, the side effects, you know, what the treatments are, what the statistics are, all those things. And to empower women, and not only women, but their families and their caregivers and their support staff, their cheerleaders, to know what questions to ask, how to ask, and to advocate for themselves and to advocate for those they love.
Patricia, if people wanted to learn more about the Our Way Forward program, where could they find it?
So it's available online. It's ourwayforward-oc.com. They could look at that. Please don't do Dr. Google for ovarian cancer, as I would suggest. It can really upset a lot of people who are concerned about certain things. Reliable information on reliable sites, Our Way Forward, National Ovarian Cancer Coalition, beovarian.org. You can look at my site, patriciawfisher.com. We'll have a link to signs and symptoms. You can look up candidaboutcancer.com. You can go to the American Cancer, the CDC, all those things that are reliable, are peer review sites that will give you solid, good information about ovarian cancer. And then Our Way Forward is ourwayforward-oc.com.
And we'll make sure that we share all those links and resources on our podcast notes. Patricia, thank you so much for joining us today. We've really learned a lot. We love the storytelling and how you took Shauna's experience and together you turned it into a great resource that can help many people, both from the patient and the care partner side.
Oh, I very much appreciate your time and giving us the opportunity to talk about it. So thank you for having me.
She's Patricia Fisher, registered nurse, storyteller, and author. I'm Matt Cavallo. This has been the Patient Activation Network podcast. We look forward to bringing you another inspirational story soon.